WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive, we are reminding all of you to set a spot out on AM 1570 on your dial as the Orioles heat up and the Ravens cool down and we get the summer going. We're going to be doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour courtesy of our friends at the Maryland Lottery beginning next Thursday. The 23rd will be at Spirits West and, of course, celebrating 25 years here at WNST. They said we couldn't. All courtesy of our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION. You buy two, you get two free. It's summertime. It's Father's Day week. We got the Orioles doing well. I love having authors on, but I love more than that when it's something I can take on my beach vacation and maybe learn something. The book is Reach. The author is Arthur Smith, and I know he's got to be angry that this football coach stole his name after so many years in entertainment, coming in and creating television shows, creating sports. We've all watched his work. We welcome Arthur Smith onto the program, the author of Reach, and not the football coach in my world. How are you? It's a pleasure to have you on.
It's funny. Every so often, we get confused. I actually, you know, I work with the NFL because we do the Pro Bowl games. And there was one time I was calling a senior executive at the NFL, and he was in a meeting. So I said, just leave a message, tell him our Arthur Smith called, and they congratulated me on the victory. And I was like, American Ninja Warrior, Hell's Kitchen, you know, some of the shows that we do. Oh no, we meant the other Arthur Smith. And I was like, okay, I got it. So.
Well, you know, I see your background and I'm very familiar with your work. I've had Akbar on and my wife loves Ninja Warrior. We had a great champion here in Casey Catanzaro from Towson, who's a local person. So for you and your background in sports, and my background's been in sports. My last name's Aparicio, right? I'm 31 years into doing this professionally in Baltimore, 25 years with the station. And the notion that sports 30 years ago would be 24-hour entertainment for everybody. And that I think people thought that sports is good on the 6 o'clock news. You watch the game, but you can't do it all day. And I think maybe you were one of the early people that saw the vision that you don't have to do Wide World of Sports just on Saturday. You can do it all day, every day. People will buy it.
Yeah. I mean, the power of sports is unquestionable. I mean, it's so interesting, you know, working at, you know, I was at Fox Sports for 4 years and I was at CBC Sports where I was president of the sports division when I was 28, which is complete insanity. The story's covered in the book.
Which was a lot of hockey back in then, that day, right?
A lot of hockey, yeah. I mean, yes. I produced Hockey Night in Canada, which for Canadians is like Monday Night Football times 10.
Did you discover Don Cherry?
I didn't discover Don Cherry. He was already there. However, I had a lot of run-ins with Don Cherry, and I had to discipline Don Cherry. I actually had to suspend him once. So every time he would do something, you know, I would say, please don't make me fire you. I'll be the most hated man in Canada. Please don't do that. So, yeah, I have some crazy Don Cherry stories, most of which are not covered in the book. But
That's its own book.
That could be a whole other book. But, yeah, I mean, the power of sports. I was about to say that when I was at Fox and I was working with, you know, Rupert Murdoch, who saw sports as a way to launch his network. I mean, you recall that when Fox got the rights to football, everybody thought he was insane. He bid $300 or $400 million more than CBS. And they thought he was crazy. But he was dealing with different kind of money. He was dealing with trying to grow his asset and all the Fox stations. And he was trying to build the network. And on the back of it, the money was cheap in the end. The deal was unbelievable. It started this, you know, the Fox network. And look at where, you know, Fox Sports is today. Rupert said in the 90s, just to go back to your question, in the 90s, he said, in a world where there's 500 channels and everything is fragmented, football will still be doing the same ratings or higher. He's right. Look at the Super Bowl ratings. Look at the NFL every week. Every network program, and I, you know, we work for everybody. We've done 200 shows for 50 networks. We have a lot of shows on broadcast, cable, streaming, work with everybody. But football is the one thing that hasn't dropped. Every other program has dropped. Every other thing has been, you know, it only makes sense. But somehow the power of sports, and especially football, but somehow the power of sports still brings people together. Yes, the World Series does it, and the NBA Finals does it, and the Olympics do it. It's just the one thing that we love to watch together, and it's and you have to watch it now. So
Did you see that coming from Canada on the hockey side, where hockey is so dominant in the culture? I mean, I don't ever go into – I was in Montreal a year ago seeing Pearl Jam and running around Toronto. I'm never there, and don't feel the cultural part of hockey to Canadian people in the way that maybe football has become that to some degree because of gambling in our country, whatever it is. But the power of sports to launch a television network, to make a city whole in the case of Baltimore when we lost the Colts and went, and you're from Montreal, the Expos, and what it does when it leaves a hole in a community. Mm-hmm. But more than that, the level of engagement and the fact that you cheer for it, you bet on it, and there's a winner and a loser. And that's sort of natural to people's interest along everything you've ever created, right? Winners and losers.
Yes, absolutely. Listen, I'm a massive sports fan. I mean, television might be my first love, but not by a lot. I love sports. I'm so grateful that I've had the opportunity to work in sports and entertainment. That's why doing a show like American Ninja Warrior is such a dream for me. It's a, you know, it's the combination of both worlds. But growing up in Canada, certainly hockey is everything. I don't even know how to explain. From like, I love all my LA sports teams. I've been in LA for 30 years, but the Montreal Canadiens is beyond the sports team to me.
It's a family member.
It's religion. It's a family member. You know, it's everything. So, no question. Canada hockey is everything. So, no question about it.
How do you take that, the sports part? I mean, you worked for Dick Clark when Dick was alive and well, and I'm sure sat in on that entertainment part of it. When I wrote my first book on the Ravens when they won the championship, Art Modell was here. Art's whole background was Mad Men, New York, television, and being a Giants fan and running off the Cleveland, pirating off the Browns, in that he saw the power of sports and television. Where does Dick Clark in the entertainment part of this plant a seed in a young guy's mind when you're doing well and doing television to say, all right, I'll move out of sports and entertainment and then come back later in life and become an entertainment mogul more than a sports mogul?
Listen, I love it all. So that was the great gift of this company, which I've had for 23 years. You know, when I'm in sports, I miss entertainment. I think I said that when I'm in entertainment, I miss sports. And so, because I was so fortunate and got to be, president of the sports division, when I was young, I figured, you know what, I want to try other things besides sports. And an opportunity came. Dick got me my green card. The story of how it happened is kind of nuts. You know, I believe in the power of reach. That's what the book's about. You know, I believe in the power of extending yourself. You only realize your full potential unless you reach beyond what you think you can do. Sometimes you find that you can actually do it. You know, I believe when you reach, you find the difference between a pipe dream and what you haven't dared to try just yet. Dick gave me an opportunity to grow my game, and he took a chance on me. You know, when we all get typecast, right? I was a very successful sports producer. I had offers from CBS Sports and NBC Sports, but I really wanted to try something else. And, you know, I took a risk, I took a reach, and, Dick was a great mentor to me, and I had a great time with him. And, I managed to actually even do a couple of sports programs while I was there. I did this thing called the Jim Thorpe Pro Sports Awards, which was on ABC, which was kind of a precursor to the ESPYs. Up there, you can see, well, that's me and Muhammad Ali. That's one of my favorites.
Look at that, with the greatest. Nice.
Yeah, with the greatest. So, and then I did this crazy golf show called The Great 18, where we played one hole at 18 of the greatest courses in America. Had John Daly and Tom Kite and Davis Love and Fuzzy Zeller. Daly had just won. Kite had just won the U.S. Open, which was a complete reach. And the story of how that happened, especially when I was at Dick Clark, there's no, you know, Dick knew nothing about sports. And when I told him the idea of, we're going to take four golfers and we're going to play one hole 18 in the greatest courses, and golf is the only sport where the playing field is different. And I went into this whole description of it, and Dick said, that's the stupidest idea I've ever heard. And I said, well, you don't play golf. And Dick wasn't a sports fan. He wasn't a sports fan, and he didn't get it. And he knew how passionate I was. And eventually we ended up doing it, but it took 2 years of planning. And by the way, PGA Live Tour very much in the news. I had my issues with the PGA Tour. There's a really, really interesting story in the book about my dealings with the PGA Tour at that time and what evolved and how this thing ended up happening. Listen, the book is filled with stories of Magic Johnson, Gretzky, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, Marlon Brando. I lost a $40 bet to Marlon Brando. That's a whole thing on a crazy night with him. How it happened is covered in the book. And but you know, Donald Trump's in the book, and Little Richard and Simon Cowell and Paul Allen. But you know what? I'd like to say that it's a memoir with a purpose, you know, and it's, yes, there's some great stories and I hope it entertains, but I'm really hoping it inspires people to reach. Every story that was selected was a story that that addressed or commented on reaching. And in a way, it's not overly preachy. Believe me, it's not, it tells stories. And then it just shows the connection between, you know, when is a good time to reach and when it doesn't work and when you're overreaching and everything else. I can't
Arthur
remember
Smith
your question.
Is our guy, that's fine. I will reiterate. The book is Reach, television executive, familiar with Ninja Warrior, Hell's Kitchen, any of the programming of Fox Sports for many, many years. And my former partner, Kenny Albert, I think worked for you for a period of time, and Goose and all those guys worked with you. But for you with making television that people want to see, and sports was something that, you know, you went to Canadians games, I went to Orioles games as a kid, there was good guys, bad guys, you hate the Yankees, you hate the Steelers if you're from Baltimore, whatever it is, but then trying to move out beyond sports and saying, all right, I'm going to create a compelling television program. And I guess that's why I bring Dick Clark into this. Food, right? Like food. The thought there would be a food network or people would care beyond food, beyond Julia Child and the Cajun Cook back in my day on cable access that came in on television. Jan King Cook. I remember making noodles when I was a little boy. The fascination with food and the fact that we all do it at least three times a day, some of us do it even more, that has become a modern thing that people want to watch, whether it's restaurant fix-em-up shows, celebrity chefs, how I make a better barbecue today on my grill. But we love food in this country, and making programming around food has become something I think that's ubiquitous in our culture. People love that as much as they love football.
Has become was the right couple of words. I mean, the thing is that in 2004, there had never been a successful network food show, and no one knew who Gordon Ramsay was. So the idea of doing Hell's Kitchen was kind of nuts at the time.
So like, and Emeril was cooking. There were cooking shows, but there wasn't a reality show.
There wasn't a big, broad network show, a broadcast network show. Mark Burnett had tried with something called The Restaurant with Rocco DiSpirito. It had a couple of seasons, but it didn't do that well. It did okay. And that was it. And so when Fox came to me, I had just done a number. My company was very early on in my company's history. And I had done a show called Paradise Hotel. I had done a show called The Swan. Don't hate me for doing The Swan. There's viewers hate me for doing The Swan. People love me for doing The Swan and hate me for doing The Swan. Very controversial show. But then they said to me, hey, Arthur, there's a tape we'd like you to see. And it's got the chef, Gordon Ramsay. And I go, who's that? And I mean, he was very well known in the UK. But certainly, and he was a Michelin star chef, you know, he's an amazing chef. And they sent me a tape of Gordon, and he was doing a show called Hell's Kitchen, but a very different show. It was a show with celebrities. And I watched the tape and I loved Gordon. What's not to like? And then I loved the title of the show. And I went to Fox and I said, hey, you know, that showing is not going to work. We got to make something that's broad, you know, and I'm not a foodie. I certainly wasn't a foodie at the time. I've evolved, just like America has evolved. Food was in a much different place in 2004 than it is today. We've evolved. And I eventually went back to Fox and told them about the idea that I had. Now, being a sports guy, I love competition. A lot of what we do is competition formats. And one of the strengths of the company, we do a show called Flora's Lava for Netflix. We got Ninja, we got Hell's. You know, and there's been a number of other ones that we've done over the years. That's one of the, you know, areas of strength of our company. And I came back to Fox with the idea of building a restaurant, two kitchens, Gordon being this whole thing, winning team, losing team, launching a career, the whole thing. And they said, okay, let's go. And, but here's the funny thing, Nestor, it's like, there was a point where Fox got extremely nervous about the show. In 2000, all the reality shows were working. Everything, Survivor launched and everything was doing well. And then 2004, 2005, there was a string of failures and everybody got nervous. The reality genre was over. Everybody was saying it's over. It's not working. And Hell's Kitchen sat on the shelf for 6 months. And then they finally put it on. And And they put it on Memorial Day. I said, well, thank you very much, guys. I waited 6 months and now I'm going on a holiday weekend. Thankfully, the show did great and the rest is history. And we've just done our 22nd season. But talk about a reach. And the story, the twists and turns of what happened, I'm giving you the headlines, obviously, but how it happened and all the lunacy that was going on behind the scene. And here we are. And, it, you know, it's great. I mean, as you said, it's become a staple of television and it's been my pleasure. And then, you know, then we did Kitchen Nightmares for 7 seasons. So first we had the only successful food show on network television. Then we had the second. And now it's everywhere. Now it's not just us. It's everybody's in the game. And it's great to see.
Arthur Smith is our guest. He is not the head coach of the Atlanta Falcons. He is the executive producer of television that you've seen. The book is Reach. It makes great Father's Day gifts, certainly something to take off. And storytelling is what you do. It's at the heart of everything you do. And I want you to tell me the story of American Ninja Warrior because my wife loves it. I've seen the parkour folks doing things. I have a radio tower. Please do not tower climb my tower. It's a bad idea. It's AM. You'll get electrocuted. But I've seen, you know, people that have these different kinds of skill set than dribbling a basketball or chasing a soccer ball or hitting a hockey puck, but are strong people. And this notion, where were you when this struck you, or was it somebody else's sort of idea that planted a seed for you?
Yeah. You know, Nestor, there's no logical reason why an obstacle course show would ever be on in primetime. Who would ever think that we would be in our 50s?
It doesn't
season?
Sound like a good idea. I mean, if I'm Mr. Big and I have the money, I'm like, Arthur, you're a smart guy and all, but like, tell me people are going to watch this again. Like, how is this going to work?
Exactly. And by the way, we didn't pitch the show to NBC. So how it made its way onto NBC is kind of nuts. We actually were on a network called G4. We started on G4. There was a show that G4 was doing that they were re-airing called Sasuke, which was a show in Japan. And the executive who was running G4 Network, which no longer exists, the show has surpassed the network. The executive was a colleague of mine at Fox Sports. He was a marketing guy from Fox Sports when I was head of programming and production. And he goes, Arthur, there's nothing getting a rating on my network except this little show. And he goes, you got to check it out. I'm dubbing it. You know, it's in Japan. I watched it and I was like so intrigued by it because there was like a plumber and a dental hygienist and a teacher running this course, and they were failing. They weren't succeeding. And there was something in the celebration of the attempt that got me very excited. And I started to think about, you know, if I can dive in and tell stories, and I pulled from my sport. I mean, I've done 3 Olympic Games. I've produced 500 Olympic profiles. So it's like,
Everybody has a story to tell, right?
So you've got to get, how do we get them vested in the story and make us care about these people? And then combine that with the showmanship that we bring to it, which is, you know, we've taken the show a long way from where
we've had it at the Baltimore Inner Harbor. My wife and I walked over the lights. Yeah. I mean, it's really amazing.
Yeah. Thank you for that. So anyhow, we started on G4, but it really was a stroke of luck how it became a primetime series on NBC. And, the only reason it became a primetime series on NBC was because Comcast, which owned G4 and E, and some other networks, bought NBC. And we went to NBC, Neil and I, the guy from G4, and we said, could you just put our finale on as an act of synergy? And they were like, no. And we said, please, you know, just throw a spotlight on this little network, on this little show. Never, ever thinking we would actually be a series on NBC. Listen, when you're a producer, sometimes you have big home run network hits, and sometimes you have singles on cable networks and smaller shows. You know, it's all part of the portfolio. I was very happy doing Ninja Warrior on G4. Of course, I'm very happy that I'm in my 15th season on NBC, but it like I said, it was like sometimes when you reach, I believe you make your good fortune. And sometimes when you reach, good things can happen. If you don't put yourself out there, you can't win the lottery unless you buy a ticket, right?
And you have to fail and you have to get back up, right? I mean, not everything you do is going to work, right? And I mean, you already mentioned the swan. I didn't have to.
The swan worked. It was just controversial. But by the way, the book talks about it. It talks, there's not everything went my way. There's a story that I tell when I was 25 years old and I was really getting a little too ahead of myself. I was way ahead of myself and I got slapped in the head. And you have to see what happened to me. And I look at failure or disappointments as redirects. I believe everything's meant to be. And I don't believe we shouldn't edit ourselves too much. Listen, just because you reach doesn't make it happen, right? It just doesn't, you know, you can't just say, oh, I want to do this. Oh, I'm going to reach. No, you have to be prepared. You have to do the work. You have to sacrifice. You have to do all of that. But once you're prepared, get out there. Like, don't overanalyze, because you may surprise yourself. And worst comes to worst, you'll find out whether you should do it. I live without any regrets, because I'm a lunatic. No, because I...
It's because you live in Los Angeles. Because, it's good out there.
Yeah. Well, that's a whole other story.
Anything you want to say on the Saudi money and live and I mean, because, I mean, you've worked for Rupert Murdoch. You know, I wouldn't vote in that direction personally. But for me, this story is really about kings wanting to usurp you and people like you in the spot with television and sports, and saying, we want to be a part of something. You saw that with Qatar stealing a World Cup and Qatari kings running around with Messi on stage. Everybody wants to be with the rock stars. Everybody wants to be with the band. This was a way for the Saudi that they couldn't buy the NFL. They bought significance is what they've bought.
Very scary. Very scary. And I know in your question, you know, I get how you feel about this, and I kind of feel the same way. I'm very nervous about it and stuff like that. I don't like to see it. You know, I love golf. I'm going to the US Open. It's in LA. I was there yesterday buying my merchandise. I was so excited. I went there on Sunday just to walk around, and so I'm a big sports fan, and I'm gonna be there. It's kind of scary. It's kind of scary, and a big turnaround. Obviously, I mean, I'm not saying anything anybody hasn't said in the wake of this thing, but you know, it's the guys who left, who got all this money, kind of got rewarded for being disloyal to the PGA, and that doesn't feel right.
A lot of it doesn't feel right. It really does. And I'm a journalist. They kill journalists. I don't like that sort of thing. So,
There's that. Oh, there's that too.
I'm not a big fan of that. I have friends who knew Khashoggi. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, hey, dude. Appreciate your time. Love your work. Hope to run into you at some point in LA. I almost came out to the Greek to see Seal last week, so you almost got me out there. Quincy Jones at the Hollywood Bowl. Hollywood Bowl worth me going out? I mean, that's a bucket list place for me.
100%.
100%. Done.
It is very uniquely LA, and it's very unique anywhere. I mean,
I drive by it up and down the hill. I was there for the Super Bowl last year, and I'm like, how can I never go to the Hollywood Bowl?
A night at the bowl is incredible. It's incredible. It's like you go there early, you go with the picnic, you eat, you drink, and then it's under the stars. And then the sound is incredible. The sound is unbelievable. It's an experience. You know, I try to go to the bowl at least once a year, and almost, you know what? It doesn't matter who's there. It's all good. I mean, I've seen everything from Electric Light Orchestra to a symphony with John Williams and in between. It's a special place.
It's like Red Rocks and these. I'm a big music guy. So the Hollywood Bowl, I got to get there. Quincy Jones putting together a little birthday party. I miss Willie Nelson, so I got to make it for Quincy. Thank you for coming on. Thanks for giving time. Good luck with the book. You don't need luck for the book. You got great stories in here. Keep making some great television, entertaining my wife. All right.
Thank you so much. I just want to point out that all of my proceeds from the book are going to the Reach Foundation. The Reach Foundation is something I set up. I didn't do the book for money. I did to get the message out there, maybe raise some money.
The foundation gives to
six charities, all who lift people up in some way. And that's what I want to do. That's what I want to do with the rest of my time on this planet, is continue to mentor, continue to help others, to pay it forward. I'm very grateful for my career. And like I said, I hope the book entertains people, but I really hope it inspires them as well. So thank you, Nestor. It's been great talking to you.
Hey, look, and good luck this year with not the Falcons, the Canadians. That's your team. When the Canadians win, that's when you're going to win, right?
Yeah. Listen, I had a great run. They were winning every year when I was 16 and 17 years old, but it's been a long time. So hopefully they'll make a comeback.
I'm old school with Barry Trotz from the Kenny Albert days here in Baltimore. So I got a chance to kiss the cup 5 years ago this week. Won the Stanley Cup once in life. I can die a happy man. It's all good. Arthur Smith, a former Canadian, always a Canadian, now in L.A. making great television. The book is Reach. You've seen his work at American Ninja Warrior as well as Hell's Kitchen. Good luck to you. Have a good Father's Day. And go read some books, everybody out there. People are writing great books. Make sure you're reading great books for Father's Day weekend. We're doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour beginning next week at Spirits West on Thursday. The whole schedule's up at BaltimorePositive.com. Brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with Window Nation. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking Baltimore Positive.